Do I need to show you the cuts and bruises all over my body? Albie said nothing, his face still quivering with rage. His eyes watered and veins popped out on his neck. We can't go back, he finally yelled, turning to look at everyone in the room. I've seen what our lives were like. We can't go back. Is that what this is about? Newt asked. Are you kidding? Albie turned on him, fiercely, even held up a clenched fist. But he stopped, lowered his arm, then went over and sank into his chair, put his face in his hands, and broke down. Thomas couldn't have been more surprised. The fearless leader of the Gladers was crying.
Albie, talk to us, Newt pressed, not willing to let it drop.
What's going on?
I did it,
Albie said through a racking sob.
I did it.
Did what? Newt asked. He looked as confused as Thomas felt. Albie looked up, his eyes wet with tears.
I burned the maps. I did it. I slammed my head on the table so you'd think it was someone else. I lied. Burned it all. I did it.
The keepers exchanged looks, shock clear in their wide eyes and raised eyebrows. For Thomas, though, it all made sense now. Albie remembered how awful his life was before he came here, and he didn't want to go back.
Well, it's a good thing we saved those maps, Minho said, completely straight-faced, almost mocking.
Thanks for the tip you gave us after the changing, to protect them.
Thomas looked to see how Albie would respond to Minho's sarcastic, almost cruel remark, but he acted as if he hadn't even heard. Newt, instead of showing anger, asked Albie to explain. Thomas knew why Newt wasn't mad. The maps were safe, the code figured out. It didn't matter.
I'm telling you.
Albie sounded like he was begging, near hysterical.
We can't go back to where we came from. I've seen it. Remember awful, awful things. Burned land, a disease, something called the flare. It was horrible. Way worse than we have it here.
If we stay here, we'll all die, Minho yelled. It's worse than that? Albie stared at Minho a long time before answering. Thomas could only think of the words he'd just said. The flare. Something about it was familiar, right on the edge of his mind. But he was certain he hadn't remembered anything about that when he'd gone through the changing.
Yes,
Albie finally said.
It's worse. Better to die than go home.
Minho snickered and leaned back in his chair.
Man, you are one buttload of sunshine, let me tell you. I'm with Thomas. I'm with Thomas 100%. If we're gonna die, let's freaking do it fighting.
Inside the maze or out of it, Thomas added, relieved that Minho was firmly on his side. He turned to Albie then and looked at him gravely.
We still live inside the world you remembered.
Albie stood again, his voice showing his defeat.
Do what you want, he sighed. Doesn't matter. We'll die no matter what.
And with that, he walked to the door and left the room. Newt let out a deep breath and shook his head.
He's never been the same since being stung. Must have been one booger of a memory. What in the world is the flare?
I don't care, Minho said. Anything's better than dying here. We can deal with the creators once we're out. But for now, we gotta do what they planned. Go through the Griever hole and escape. If some of us die, so be it.
Frypan snorted.
You shanks are driving me nuts. I can't get out of the maze, and this idea of hanging with the Grievers at their bachelor pad sounds as stupid as anything I've ever heard in my life. Might as well slit our wrists.
The other keepers burst out in argument, everyone talking over everyone else. Newt finally screamed for them to shut up. Thomas spoke again once things settled.
I'm going through the hole, or I'll die trying to get there.
Looks like Minho will too. And I'm sure Teresa's in.
If we can fight off the Grievers long enough for someone to punch in the code and shut them down, then we can go through the door they come through. We'll have passed the tests. Then we can face the creators themselves.
Newt's grin had no humor in it.
And you think we can fight off the Grievers? Even if we don't die, we'll probably all get stung. Every last one of them might be waiting for us when we get to the cliff. The Beetle Blades are out there constantly. The creators will know when we make our run for it.
He'd been dreading it, but Thomas knew it was time to tell them the last part of his plan.
I don't think they'll sting us.
The changing was a variable meant for us while we lived here, but that part will be over. Plus, we might have one thing going for us.
Yeah? Newt asked, rolling his eyes.
Can't wait to hear it.
It doesn't do the creators any good if we all die. This thing is meant to be hard, not impossible. I think we finally know for sure that the Grievers are programmed to only kill one of us each day. So somebody can sacrifice himself to save the others while we run to the hole. I think this might be how it's supposed to happen.
The room went silent until the blood housekeeper barked a loud laugh.
Excuse me? Winston asked. So your suggestion is that we throw some poor kid to the wolves so the rest of us can escape? This is your brilliant suggestion.
Thomas refused to admit how bad that sounded, but an idea hit him.
Yes, Winston. I'm glad you're so good at paying attention.
He ignored the glare that got him. And it seems obvious who the poor kid should be.
Oh, yeah,
Winston asked.
Who?
Thomas folded his arms.
Me.
Chapter 52. The meeting erupted into a chorus of arguments. Newt very calmly stood up, walked over to Thomas, and grabbed him by the arm. He pulled him toward the door.
You're leaving. Now.
Thomas was stunned.
Leaving? Why?
Think you've said enough for one meeting. We need to talk and decide what to do, without you here.
They had reached the door, and Newt gave him a gentle push outside.
Wait for me by the box. When we're done, you and I'll talk.
He started to turn around, but Thomas reached out and grabbed him.
You gotta believe me, Newt. It's the only way out of here. We can do it, I swear. We're meant to.
Newt got in his face and spoke in an angry rasp of a whisper.
Yeah, I especially love the bit where you volunteered to get yourself killed.
I'm perfectly willing to do it.
Thomas meant it, but only because of the guilt that racked him. Guilt that he'd somehow helped design the maze. But deep down, he held on to the hope that he could fight long enough for someone to punch in the code and shut down the Grievers before they killed him. Open the door.
Oh, really?
Newt asked, seeming irritated.
Mr. Noble himself, aren't you?
I have plenty of my own reasons. In some ways it's my fault we're here in the first place.
He stopped, took a breath to compose himself.
Anyway, I'm going no matter what, so you better not waste it.
Newt frowned, his eyes suddenly filled with compassion.
If you really did design the maze, Tommy, it's not your fault. You're a kid. You can't help what they forced you to do.
But it didn't matter what Newt said. What anyone said. Thomas bore the responsibility anyway, and it was growing heavier the more he thought about it.
I just feel like I need to save everyone. To redeem myself.
Newt stepped back, slowly shaking his head.
You know what's funny, Tommy?
What? Thomas replied, wary.
I actually believe you. You just don't have an ounce of lying in those eyes of yours.
And I can't bloody believe I'm about to say this.
He paused.
But I'm going back in there to convince those shanks we should go through the Griever hole, just like you said.
Might as well fight the Grievers rather than sit around letting them pick us off one by one.
He held up a finger.
But listen to me. I don't want another buggin' word about you dying and all that heroic clunk. If we're gonna do this, we'll take our chances. All of us. You hear me?
Thomas held his hands up, overwhelmed with relief. Loud and clear.
I was just trying to make the point that it's worth the risk. If someone's going to die every night anyway, we might as well use it to our advantage.
Newt frowned.
Well, ain't that just cheery?
Thomas turned to walk away, but Newt called out to him.
Tommy.
Yeah?
He stopped but didn't look back.
If I can convince those shanks, and that's a big if, the best time to go would be at night. We can hope that a lot of the Grievers might be out and about in the maze, not in that hole of theirs.
Good that, Thomas agreed with him.
He just hoped Newt could convince the Keepers. He turned to look at Newt and nodded. Newt smiled, a barely there crack in his worried grimace.
We should do it tonight, before anyone else is killed.
And before Thomas could say anything, Newt disappeared back into the gathering.
Thomas, a little shocked at the last statement, left the homestead and walked to an old bench near the box and took a seat, his mind a whirlwind. He kept thinking of what Albie had said about the flare and what it could mean. The older boy had also mentioned burned earth and a disease. Thomas didn't remember anything like that, but if it was all true, the world they were trying to get back to didn't sound so good. Still, what other choice did they have? Besides the fact that the Grievers were attacking every night, the glade had basically shut down. Frustrated, worried, tired of his thoughts, he called out to Teresa. "Can you hear me?"
"Yeah," she replied.
"Where are you?"
"By the box. I'll come in a minute."
Thomas realized how badly he needed her company.
"Good. I'll tell you the plan. I think it's on."
"What is it?"
Thomas leaned back on the bench and put his right foot up on his knee, wondering how Teresa would react to what he was going to say.
"We gotta go through the Griever hole.
Use that code to shut the Grievers down and open a door out of here." A pause.
"I figured it was something like that."
Thomas thought for a second, then added, "Unless you've got any better ideas."
"No. It's gonna be awful."
He punched his right fist against his other hand, even though he knew she couldn't see him.
"We can do this." "Doubtful."
"Well, we have to try." Another pause, this one longer. He could feel her resolve.
"You're right.
I think we're leaving tonight. Just come out here and we can talk more about it."
"I'll be there in a few minutes."
Thomas's stomach tightened into a knot. The reality of what he had suggested, the plan Newt was trying to convince the Keepers to accept, was starting to hit him. He knew it was dangerous, but the idea of actually fighting the Grievers, not just running from them, was terrifying. The absolute best-case scenario was that only one of them would die, but even that couldn't be trusted. Maybe the creators would just reprogram the creatures, and then all bets were off. He tried not to think about it. Sooner than Thomas expected, Teresa had found him and was sitting next to him, her body pressed against his despite plenty of room on the bench. She reached out and took his hand. He squeezed back, so hard he knew it must have hurt.
"Tell me," she said.
Thomas did, reciting every word he'd told the Keepers, hating how Teresa's eyes filled with worry and terror. "The plan was easy to talk about," he said after he'd told her everything. "But Newt thinks we should go tonight. It doesn't sound so good now." It especially terrified him to think about Chuck and Teresa out there. He'd faced the Grievers down already and knew all too well what it was like. He wanted to be able to protect his friends from the horrible experience, but he knew he couldn't.
"We can do it," she said in a quiet voice.
Hearing her say that only made him worry more.
"Holy crap, I'm scared."
"Holy crap, you're human. You should be scared."
Thomas didn't respond, and for a long time they just sat there, holding hands, no word spoken, in their minds or aloud. He felt the slightest hint of peace, as fleeting as it was, and tried to enjoy it for however long it might last. Chapter 53 Thomas was almost sad when the gathering finally ended. When Newt came out of the homestead, he knew that the time for rest was over. The Keeper spotted them and approached at a limping run. Thomas noticed he'd let go of Teresa's hand without thinking about it. Newt finally came to a halt and crossed his arms over his chest as he looked down at them sitting on the bench.
"This is bloody nuts. You know that, right?"
His face was impossible to read, but there seemed to be a hint of victory in his eyes. Thomas stood up, feeling a rush of excitement flooding his body.
"So they agreed to go?"
Newt nodded.
"All of them. Wasn't as hard as I thought it'd be. Those Shanks have seen what happens at night with those bloody doors open. We can't get out of the stupid maze. Gotta try something."
He turned and looked at the Keepers, who'd started to gather their respective work groups.
"Now we just have to convince the Gladers."
Thomas knew that would be even more difficult than persuading the Keepers had been.
"You think they'll go for it?" Teresa asked,
finally standing to join them. "Not all of them," Newt said, and Thomas could see the frustration in his eyes. "Some will stay and take their chances. Guarantee it." Thomas didn't doubt people would blanch at the thought of making a run for it. Asking them to fight the Grievers was asking a lot.
"What about Albie?"
"Who knows?" Newt responded, looking around the glade, observing the keepers and their groups. "I'm convinced that bugger really is more scared to go back home than he is of the Grievers. But I'll get him to go with us. Don't worry." Thomas wished he could bring back memories of those things that were tormenting Albie, but there was nothing.
"How are you going to convince him?"
Newt laughed.
"I'll make up some clunk. Tell him we'll all find a new life in another part of the world. Live happily ever after."
Thomas shrugged.
"Well, maybe we can.
I promised Chuck I'd get him home, you know. Or at least find him a home."
"Yeah, well," Teresa murmured. "Anything's better than this place."
Thomas looked around at the arguments breaking out across the glade, keepers doing their best to convince people they should take a chance and battle their way through the Griever hole. Some gladers stomped away, but most seemed to listen and at least consider.
"So what's next?" Teresa asked.
Newt took a deep breath.
"Figure out who's going, who's staying. Get ready, food, weapons, all that. Then we go. Thomas, I'd put you in charge since it was your idea, but it's going to be hard enough to get people on our side without making the Greenie our leader. No offense. So just lay low, okay? We'll leave the code business to you and Teresa. You can handle that from the background."
Thomas was more than fine with lying low. Finding that computer station and punching in the code was more than enough responsibility for him. Even with that much on his shoulders, he had to fight the rising flood of panic he felt.
"You sure make it sound easy,"
he finally said, trying his best to lighten up the situation. Or at least sound like he was. Newt folded his arms again, looked at him closely.
"Like you said, stay here, one shank will die tonight. Go, one shank will die. What's the difference?"
He pointed at Thomas.
"If you're right."
"I am." Thomas knew he was right about the hole, the code, the door, the need to fight. But whether one person or many would die, he had no clue. However, if there was one thing his gut told him, it was not to admit to any doubt. Newt clapped him on the back.
"Good that. Let's get to work."
The next few hours were frantic. Most of the gladers ended up agreeing to go, even more than Thomas would have guessed. Even Albie decided to make the run. Though no one admitted it, Thomas bet most of them were banking on the theory that only one person would be killed by the Grievers, and they figured their chances of not being the unlucky sap were decent. Those who decided to stay in the glade were few but adamant and loud. They mainly walked around sulking, trying to tell others how stupid they were. Eventually, they gave up and kept their distance. As for Thomas and the rest of those committed to the escape, there was a ton of work to be done. Backpacks were handed out and stuffed full of supplies. Fry Pan, Newt told Thomas that the cook had been one of the last keepers to agree to go, was in charge of gathering all the food and figuring out a way to distribute it evenly among the packs. Syringes of grief serum were included, even though Thomas didn't think the Grievers would sting them. Chuck was in charge of filling water bottles and getting them out to everyone. Teresa helped him, and Thomas asked her to sugarcoat the trip as much as she could, even if she had to flat-out lie, which was mostly the case. Chuck had tried to act brave from the time he first found out they were going for it, but his sweaty skin and dazed eyes revealed the truth. Minho went to the cliff with a group of runners, taking ivy ropes and rocks to test the invisible Griever hole one last time. They had to hope the creatures would keep to their normal schedule and not come out during daytime hours. Thomas had contemplated just jumping into the hole right away and trying to punch in the code quickly, but he had no idea what to expect or what might be waiting for him. Newt was right. They'd better wait until night and hope that most of the Grievers were in the maze, not inside their hole. When Minho returned, safe and sound, Thomas thought he seemed very optimistic that it really was an exit. Or entrance, depending on how you looked at it. Thomas helped Newt distribute the weapons, and even more innovative ones were created in their desperation to be prepared for the Grievers. Wooden poles were carved into spears or wrapped in barbed wire. The knives were sharpened and fastened with twine to the ends of sturdy branches hacked from trees in the woods. Chunks of broken glass were duct-taped to shovels. By the end of the day, the gladers had turned into a small army. A very pathetic, ill-prepared army, Thomas thought, but an army all the same. Once he and Teresa were done helping, they went to the secret spot in the deadheads to strategize about the station inside the Griever hole and how they planned to punch in the code. "We have to be the ones to do it," Thomas said as they leaned their backs against craggy trees, the once green leaves already starting to turn gray from the lack of artificial sunlight. "That way, if we get separated, we can be in contact and still help each other." Teresa had grabbed a stick and was peeling off the bark.
"But we need backup in case something happens to us."
"Definitely. Minho and Newt know the code words. We'll tell them they have to get them punched into the computer if we... well, you know." Thomas didn't want to think about all the bad things that might happen.
"Not much to the plan, then,"
Teresa yawned, as if life were completely normal. "Not much at all. Fight the Grievers, punch in the code, escape through the door. Then we deal with the creators, whatever it takes."
6 code words. Who knows how many Grievers?"
Teresa broke the stick in half.
"What do you think Wicked stands for, anyway?"
Thomas felt like he'd been hit in the stomach. For some reason, hearing the word at that moment, from someone else, knocked something loose in his mind, and it clicked. He was stunned he hadn't made the connection sooner.
"That sign I saw out in the maze, remember?
The metal one with the words stamped on it?" Thomas's heart had started to race with excitement. Teresa crinkled her forehead in confusion for a second, but then a light seemed to blink on behind her eyes.
"Whoa! World in Catastrophe, Kill Zone Experiment Department. Wicked! Wicked is good. What I wrote on my arm. What does that even mean?"
"No idea. Which is why I'm scared to death that what we're about to do is a whole pile of stupid. Could be a bloodbath.
Everyone knows what they're getting into."
Teresa reached out and took his hand.
"Nothing to lose, remember?"
Thomas remembered, but for some reason, Teresa's words fell flat. They didn't have much hope in them.
"Nothing to lose," he repeated.
Chapter 54. Just before the normal door-closing time, Frypan prepared one last meal to carry them through the night. The mood hanging over the gladers as they ate couldn't have been more somber or sodden with fear. Thomas found himself sitting next to Chuck, absently picking at his food.
"So, Thomas,"
the boy said through a huge bite of mashed potatoes,
"who am I nicknamed after?"
Thomas couldn't help shaking his head. Here they were, about to embark on probably the most dangerous task of their lives, and Chuck was curious where he'd gotten his nickname.
"I don't know. Darwin, maybe? The dude who figured out evolution? I bet no one's ever called him a dude before."
Chuck took another big bite and seemed to think that was the best time to talk, full mouth and all.
"You know, I'm really not all that scared. I mean, last few nights, sitting in the homestead, just waiting for a griever to come in and steal one of us was the worst thing I've ever done. At least now we're taking it to them, trying something. And at least..."
"At least what?" Thomas asked. He didn't believe for a second that Chuck wasn't scared. It almost hurt to see him acting brave.
"Well, everyone's speculating they can only kill one of us. Maybe I sound like a shuck, but it gives me some hope. At least most of us will make it through. Just leaves one poor sucker to die. Better than all of us."
It made Thomas sick to think people were hanging on to that hope of just one person dying. The more he thought about it, the less he believed it was true. The creators knew the plan. They might reprogram the grievers. But even false hope was better than nothing.
"Maybe we can all make it. As long as everyone fights."
Chuck stopped stuffing his face for a second and looked at Thomas carefully.
"You really think that? Or you're just trying to cheer me up?"
"We can do it." Thomas ate his last bite, took a big drink of water. He'd never felt like such a liar in his life.
people were going to die. But he was going to do everything possible to make sure Chuck wasn't one of them. And Teresa. Don't forget my promise. You can still plan on it. Chuck frowned.
Big deal. I keep hearing the world is in clunky shape.
Hey, maybe so. But we'll find the people who care about us. You'll see. Chuck stood up.
Well, I don't want to think about it, he announced. Just get me out of the maze, and I'll be one happy dude.
Good that, Thomas agreed.
A commotion from the other tables caught his attention. Newt and Albie were gathering the gladers, telling everyone it was time to go. Albie seemed mostly himself, but Thomas still worried about the guy's mental state. In Thomas's mind, Newt was in charge, but he could also be a loose cannon sometimes. The icy fear and panic Thomas had experienced so often the last few days swept over him once again in full force. This was it. They were going. Trying not to think about it, to just act, he grabbed his backpack. Chuck did the same, and they headed for the west door, the one leading to the cliff. Thomas found Minho and Teresa talking to each other near the left side of the door, going over the hastily made plans to enter the escape code once they got into the hole.
"You Shanks ready?" Minho asked when they came up. "Thomas, this was all your idea, so it better work. If not, I'll kill you before the Grievers can."
"Thanks," Thomas said. But he couldn't shake the twisting feeling in his gut. What if somehow he was wrong? What if the memories he'd had were false ones, planted somehow? The thought terrified him, and he pushed it aside. There was no going back. He looked at Teresa, who shifted from foot to foot, wringing her hands.
"You okay?" he asked.
"I'm fine," she answered with a small smile, clearly not fine at all. "Just anxious to get it over with."
"Amen, sister," Minho said. He looked the calmest to Thomas, the most confident, the least scared. Thomas envied him. When Newt finally had everyone gathered, he called for quiet, and Thomas turned to hear what he had to say.
"There's 41 of us."
He pulled the backpack he was holding onto his shoulders and hoisted a thick wooden pole with barbed wire wrapped around its tip. The thing looked deadly.
"Make sure you've got your weapons. Other than that, isn't a whole lot to bug and say. You've all been told the plan. We're going to fight our way through to the Griever hole, and Tommy here's going to punch in his little magic code, and then we're going to get payback on the creators. Simple as that."
Thomas barely heard Newt, having seen Albie sulking over to the side, away from the main group of the gladers, alone. Albie picked at the string of his bow while he stared at the ground. A quiver of arrows hung over his shoulder. Thomas felt a rising tide of worry that somehow Albie was unstable, that somehow he'd screw everything up. He decided to watch him carefully if he could.
"Shouldn't someone give a pep talk or something?"
Minho asked, pulling Thomas's attention away from Albie.
"Go ahead," Newt replied.
Minho nodded and faced the crowd.
"Be careful," he said dryly. "Don't die."
Thomas would have laughed if he could, but he was too scared for it to come out.
"Great. We're all bloody inspired,"
Newt answered, then pointed over his shoulder toward the maze.
"You all know the plan. After 2 years of being treated like mice, tonight we're making a stand. Tonight we're taking the fight back to the creators, no matter what we have to go through to get there. Tonight, the Grievers better be scared."
Someone cheered, and then someone else. Soon shouts and battle calls broke out, rising in volume, filling the air like thunder. Thomas felt a trickle of courage inside him. He grasped it, clung to it, urged it to grow. Newt was right. Tonight, they'd fight. Tonight, they'd make their stand, once and for all. Thomas was ready. He roared with the other gladers. He knew they should probably be quiet, not bring any more attention to themselves, but he didn't care. The game was on. Newt thrust his weapon into the air and yelled,
"Hear that, creators! We're coming!"
And with that, he turned and ran into the maze, his limp barely noticeable, into the gray air that seemed darker than the glade, full of shadows and blackness. The gladers around Thomas, still cheering, picked up their weapons and ran after him, even Albie. Thomas followed,
falling into line between Teresa and Chuck, hefting a big wooden spear with a knife tied to its tip. The sudden feeling of responsibility for his friends almost overwhelmed him, made it hard to run. But he kept going, determined to win. "You can do this," he thought. "Just make it to that hole." Chapter 55. Thomas kept a steady pace as he ran with the other gladers along the stone pathways toward the cliff. He'd grown used to running the maze, but this was completely different. The sounds of shuffling feet echoed up the walls, and the red lights of the beetle blades flashed more menacingly in the ivy. The creators were certainly watching, listening. One way or another, there was going to be a fight. "Scared?" Teresa asked him as they ran. "No, I love things made out of blubber and steel. Can't wait to see them." He felt no mirth or humor, and wondered if there'd ever be a time again when he would.
"So funny," she responded.
She was right next to him, but his eyes stayed glued up ahead.
"We'll be fine. Just stay close to me and Min-ho." "Ah, my knight in shining armor. What, you don't think I can fend for myself?"
Actually, he thought quite the opposite. Teresa seemed as tough as anybody there.
"No, I'm just trying to be nice."
The group was spread out across the full width of the corridor, running at a steady but quick pace. Thomas wondered how long the non-runners would hold up. As if in response to the thought, Newt fell back, finally tapping Min-ho on the shoulder.
"You lead the way now," Thomas heard him say.
Min-ho nodded and ran to the front, guiding the gladers through all the turns necessary. Every step was agonizing for Thomas. What courage he'd gathered had turned to dread, and he wondered when the Grievers would finally give chase. Wondered when the fight would begin. And so it went for him as they kept moving, those gladers not used to running such distances gasping in huge gulps of air. But no one quit. On and on they ran, with no signs of Grievers. And as the time passed, Thomas let the slightest trickle of hope enter his system. Maybe they'd make it before getting attacked. Maybe. Finally, after the longest hour of Thomas's life, they reached the long alley that led to the last turn before the cliff, a short corridor to the right that branched off like the stem of the letter T. Thomas, his heart thumping, sweat slicking his skin, had moved up right behind Min-ho, Teresa at his side. Min-ho slowed at the corner, then stopped, holding up a hand to tell Thomas and the others to do the same. Then he turned, a look of horror on his face.
"Do you hear that?"
he whispered. Thomas shook his head, trying to squash the terror Minho's expression had given him. Min-ho crept ahead and peeked around the sharp edge of stone, looking toward the cliff. Thomas had seen him do that before, when they'd followed a griever to this very spot. Just like that time, Min-ho jerked back and turned to face him.
"Oh, no,"
the keeper said through a moan.
"Oh, no."
Then Thomas heard it. Griever sounds. It was as if they'd been hiding, waiting, and now were coming to life. He didn't even have to look. He knew what Min-ho was going to say before he said it.
"There's at least a dozen of them, maybe 15.
He reached up and rubbed his eyes with the heels of his hands.
"They're just waiting for us."
The icy chill of fear bit Thomas harder than ever before. He looked over at Teresa, about to say something, but stopped when he saw the expression on her pale face. He'd never seen terror present itself so starkly. Newt and Albie had moved up the line of waiting gladers to join Thomas and the others. Apparently Min-ho's pronouncement had already been whispered through the ranks, because the first thing Newt said was,
"Well, we knew we'd have to fight."
But the tremor in his voice gave him away. He was just trying to say the right thing. Thomas felt it himself. It had been easy to talk about. The nothing-to-lose fight, the hope that just one of them would be taken, the chance to finally escape. But now it was here, literally around the corner. Doubts that he could go through with it seeped into his mind and heart. He wondered why the Grievers were just waiting. The Beetle Blades had obviously let them know the gladers were coming. Were the creators enjoying this? He had an idea.
Maybe they've already taken a kid back at the glade. Maybe we can get past them. Why else would they just be sitting?
A loud noise from behind cut him off. He spun to see more Grievers moving down the corridor toward them, spikes flaring, metal arms groping, coming from the direction of the glade. Thomas was just about to say something when he heard sounds from the other end of the long alley. He looked to see yet more Grievers. The enemy was on all sides, blocking them off completely. The gladers surged toward Thomas, forming a tight group, forcing him to move out into the open intersection where the cliff corridor met the long alley. He saw the pack of Grievers between them and the cliff, spikes extended, their moist skin pulsing in and out, waiting, watching. The other two groups of Grievers had closed in and stopped just a few dozen feet from the gladers, also waiting, watching. Thomas slowly turned in a circle, fought the fear as he took it all in. They were surrounded. They had no choice now. There was nowhere to go. A sharp, pulsing pain throbbed behind his eyes. The gladers compressed into a tighter group around him, everyone facing outward, huddled together in the center of the T-intersection. Thomas was pressed between Newt and Teresa. He could feel Newt trembling. No one said a word. The only sounds were the eerie moans and whirs of machinery coming from the Grievers, sitting there as if enjoying the little trap they'd set for the humans. Their disgusting bodies heaved in and out with mechanical wheezes of breath. "What are they doing?" Thomas called out to Teresa. "What are they waiting for?" She didn't answer, which worried him. He reached out and squeezed her hand. The gladers around him stood silent, clutching their meager weapons. Thomas looked over at Newt. "Got any ideas?" "No," he replied, his voice just the tiniest bit shaky. "I don't understand what they're bloody waiting for." "We shouldn't have come," Albie said. He'd been so quiet, his voice sounded odd, especially with the hollow echo the maze walls created. Thomas was in no mood for whining. They had to do something. "Well, we'd be no better off in the homestead. Hate to say it, but if one of us dies, that's better than all of us." He really hoped the one-person-a-night thing was true now. Seeing all these Grievers close up hit home with an explosion of reality. Could they really fight them all? A long moment passed before Albie replied. "Maybe I should..." He trailed off and started walking forward, in the direction of the cliff, slowly, as if in a trance. Thomas watched in detached awe. He couldn't believe his eyes. "Albie," Newt said, "get back here." Instead of responding, Albie took off running. He headed straight for the pack of Grievers between him and the cliff. "Albie!" Newt screamed. Thomas started to say something himself, but Albie had already made it to the monsters and jumped on top of one. Newt moved away from Thomas's side and toward Albie, but five or six Grievers had already burst to life and attacked the boy in a blur of metal and skin. Thomas reached out and grabbed Newt by the arms before he could go any farther, then pulled him backward. "Let go!" Newt yelled, struggling to break loose. "Are you nuts?" Thomas shouted. "There's nothing you can do!" Two more Grievers broke from the pack and swarmed over Albie, piling on top of each other, snapping and cutting at the boy, as if they wanted to rub it in, show their vicious cruelty. Somehow, impossibly, Albie didn't scream. Thomas lost sight of the body as he struggled with Newt, thankful for the distraction. Newt finally gave up, collapsing backward in defeat. Albie'd flipped once and for all, Thomas thought, fighting the urge to rid his stomach of its contents. Their leader had been so scared to go back to whatever he'd seen, he'd chosen to sacrifice himself instead. He was gone. Totally gone. Thomas helped steady Newt on his feet. The glader couldn't stop staring at the spot where his friend had disappeared.
"I can't believe it," Newt whispered. "I can't believe he just did that."
Thomas shook his head, unable to reply. Seeing Albie go down like that, a new kind of pain he'd never felt before filled his insides. An ill, disturbed pain. It felt worse than the physical kind. And he didn't even know if it had anything to do with Albie. He'd never much liked the guy. But the thought that what he'd just seen might happen to Chuck, or Teresa. Minho moved closer to Thomas and Newt, squeezed Newt's shoulder. "We can't waste what he did." He turned toward Thomas.
We'll fight him if we have to. Make a path to the cliff for you and Teresa. Get in the hole and do your thing. We'll keep them off until you scream for us to follow.
Thomas looked at each of the three sets of grievers. Not one had yet made a move toward the gladers, and nodded.
Hopefully they'll go dormant for a while. We should only need a minute or so to punch in the code.
How can you guys be so heartless?
Newt murmured, the disgust in his voice surprising Thomas.
What do you want, Newt? Mino said. Should we all dress up and have a funeral?
Newt didn't respond, still staring at the spot where the grievers seemed to be feeding on Albi beneath them. Thomas couldn't help taking a peek. He saw a smear of bright red on one of the creature's bodies. His stomach turned, and he quickly looked away. Minho continued.
Albi didn't want to go back to his old life. He freaking sacrificed himself for us, and they aren't attacking, so maybe it worked. We'd be heartless if we wasted it.
Newt only shrugged, closed his eyes. Minho turned and faced the huddled group of gladers.
Listen up! Number one priority is to protect Thomas and Teresa. Get them to the cliff and the hole so—
The sounds of the grievers revving to life cut him off. Thomas looked up in horror. The creatures on both sides of their group seemed to have noticed them again. Spikes were popping in and out of blubbery skin. Their bodies shuddered and pulsed. Then, in unison, the monsters moved forward, slowly, instrument-tipped appendages unfolding, pointed at Thomas and the gladers, ready to kill. Tightening their trap formation like a noose, the grievers steadily charged toward them. Albi's sacrifice had failed miserably. Chapter 56. Thomas grabbed Minho by the arm.
Somehow I have to get through that.
He nodded toward the rolling pack of grievers between them and the cliff. They looked like one big mass of rumbling, spiked blubber, glistening with flashes of lights off steel. They were even more menacing in the faded gray light. Thomas waited for an answer as Minho and Newt exchanged a long glance. The anticipation of fighting was almost worse than the fear of it.
They're coming! Teresa yelled. We have to do something!
You lead,
Newt finally said to Minho, his face barely more than a whisper.
Make a bloody path for Tommy and the girl.
Do it!
Minho nodded once, a steel look of resolve hardening his features. Then he turned toward the gladers.
We head straight for the cliff. Fight through the middle. Push the shuckin' things toward the walls. What matters most is getting Thomas and Teresa to the griever hole.
Thomas looked away from him, back at the approaching monsters. They were only a few feet away. He gripped his poor excuse for a spear.
We have to stay close together, he told Teresa. Let them do the fighting. We have to get through that hole.
He felt like a coward, but he knew that any fighting, and any deaths, would be in vain if they didn't get that code punched, the door to the creators opened.
I know, she replied. Stick together.
Ready!
Minho yelled next to Thomas, raising his barbed wire-wrapped club into the air with one hand, a long silver knife in the other. He pointed the knife at the horde of grievers. A flash glinted off the blade.
Now!
The keeper ran forward without waiting for a response. Newt went after him, right on his heels. Then the rest of the gladers followed, a tight pack of roaring boys charging ahead to a bloody battle, weapons raised. Thomas held Teresa's hand, let them all go past, felt them bump him, smelled their sweat, sensed their terror, waiting for the perfect opportunity to make his own dash. Just as the first sounds of boys crashing into grievers filled the air, pierced with screams and roars of machinery and wood clacking against steel, Chuck ran past Thomas, who quickly reached out and grabbed his arm. Chuck stumbled backward, then looked up at Thomas, his eyes so full of fright, Thomas felt something shatter in his heart. In that split second, he'd made a decision.
Chuck, you're with me and Teresa.
He said it forcefully, with authority, leaving no room for doubt. Chuck looked ahead at the engaged battle.
But...
He trailed off, and Thomas knew the boy relished the idea, though he was ashamed to admit it. Thomas quickly tried to save his dignity.
We need your help in the griever hole, in case one of those things is in there waiting for us.
Chuck nodded quickly, too quickly. Again, Thomas felt the pang of sadness in his heart, felt the urge to get Chuck home safely, stronger than he'd ever felt it before.
"Okay, then," Thomas said. "Hold Teresa's other hand. Let's go."
Chuck did as he was told, trying so hard to act brave. And, Thomas noted, not saying a word, perhaps for the first time in his life.
"They've made an opening," Teresa shouted in Thomas's mind.
It sent a quick snap of pain shooting through his skull. She pointed ahead, and Thomas saw the narrow aisle forming in the middle of the corridor, gladers fighting wildly to push the grievers toward the walls.
"Now!"
Thomas shouted. He sprinted ahead, pulling Teresa behind him, Teresa pulling Chuck behind her, running at full speed, spears and knives cocked for battle, forward into the bloody, scream-filled hallway of stone, toward the cliff. War raged around them. Gladers fought, panic-induced adrenaline driving them on. The sounds echoing off the walls were a cacophony of terror, human screams, metal clashing against metal, motors roaring, the haunted shrieks of the grievers, saws spinning, claws clasping, boys yelling for help. All was a blur, bloody and gray and flashes of steel. Thomas tried not to look left or right, only ahead, through the narrow gap formed by the gladers. Even as they ran, Thomas went through the code words again in his mind. Float, catch, bleed, death, stiff, push. They just had to make it a few dozen feet more.
"Something just sliced my arm,"
Teresa screamed. Even as she said it, Thomas felt a sharp stab in his leg. He didn't look back, didn't bother answering. The seething impossibility of their predicament was like a heavy deluge of black water flooding around him, dragging him toward surrender. He fought it, pushed himself forward. There was the cliff, opening out into a gray, dark sky, about 20 feet away. He surged ahead, pulling his friends. Battles clashed on both sides of them. Thomas refused to look, refused to help. A griever spun directly in his path. A boy, his face hidden from sight, was clutched in its claws, stabbing viciously into the thick, whalish skin, trying to escape. Thomas dodged to the left, kept running. He heard a shriek as he passed by, a throat-scorching wail that could only mean the glader had lost the fight, met a horrific end. The scream ran on, shattering the air, overpowering the other sounds of war, until it faded in death. Thomas felt his heart tremble, hoped it wasn't someone he knew.
"Just keep going," Teresa said.
"I know,"
Thomas shouted back, this time out loud. Someone sprinted past Thomas, bumped him. A griever charged in from the right, blades twirling. A glader cut it off, attacked it with two long swords, metal clacking and clanging as they fought. Thomas heard a distant voice, screaming the same words over and over, something about him, about protecting him as he ran. It was Minho, desperation and fatigue radiant in his shouts. Thomas kept going.
"One almost got Chuck,"
Teresa yelled, a violent echo in his head. More grievers came at them, more gladers helped. Winston had picked up Albie's bow and arrow, flinging the steel-pointed shafts at anything non-human that moved, missing more than he hit. Boys Thomas didn't know ran alongside him, whacking at griever instruments with their makeshift weapons, jumping on them, attacking. The sounds, clashes, clangs, screams, moaning wails, roars of engines, spinning saws, snapping blades, the screech of spikes against the floor, hair-raising pleas for help. It all grew to a crescendo, became unbearable. Thomas screamed, but he kept running until they made it to the cliff. He skidded to a stop, right on the edge. Teresa and Chuck bumped into him, almost sending all three of them to an endless fall. In a split second, Thomas surveyed his view of the griever hole. Hanging out in the middle of thin air were ivy vines stretching to nowhere. Earlier, Minho and a couple of runners had pulled out ropes of ivy and knotted them to vines still attached to the walls. They'd then tossed the loose ends over the cliff until they hit the griever hole, where now 6 or 7 vines ran from the stone edge to an invisible rough square, hovering in the empty sky, where they disappeared into nothingness. It was time to jump. Thomas hesitated, feeling one last moment of stark terror, hearing the horrible sounds behind him, seeing the illusion in front of him, then snapped out of it. "You first, Teresa." He wanted to go last to make sure a griever didn't get her or Chuck. To his surprise, she didn't hesitate. After squeezing Thomas's hand, then Chuck's shoulder, she leaped off the edge, immediately stiffening her legs with her arms by her sides. Thomas held his breath until she slipped into the spot between the cut-off ivy ropes and disappeared. It looked as if she'd been erased from existence with one quick swipe.
"Whoa!"
Chuck yelled, the slightest hint of his old self breaking through.
"Whoa is right," Thomas said. "You're next."
Before the boy could argue, Thomas grabbed him under his arms, squeezed Chuck's torso.
"Push off with your legs, and I'll give you a lift. Ready? 1, 2, 3!
He grunted with effort, heaved him over toward the hole. Chuck screamed as he flew through the air, and he almost missed the target, but his feet went through, then his stomach and arms slammed against the sides of the invisible hole before he disappeared inside. The boy's bravery solidified something in Thomas's heart. He loved the kid. He loved him as if they had the same mom. Thomas tightened the straps on his backpack, held his makeshift fighting spear tightly in his right fist. The sounds behind him were awful, horrible. He felt guilty for not helping.
"Just do your part," he told himself.
Steeling his nerves, he tapped his spear against the stone ground, then planted his left foot on the very edge of the cliff and jumped, catapulting up and into the twilight air. He pulled the spear close to his torso, pointed his toes downward, stiffened his body. Then he hit the hole. Chapter 57. A line of icy cold shot across Thomas's skin as he entered the griever hole, starting from his toes and continuing up his whole body as if he'd jumped through a flat plain of freezing water. The world went even darker around him as his feet thumped to a landing on a slippery surface, then shot out from under him. He fell backward into Teresa's arms. She and Chuck helped him stand. It was a miracle Thomas hadn't stabbed someone's eye out with his spear. The griever hole would have been pitch black if not for the beam of Teresa's flashlight cutting through the darkness. As Thomas got his bearings, he realized they were standing in a 10-foot-high stone cylinder. It was damp and covered in shiny, grimy oil, and it stretched out in front of them for dozens of yards before it faded into darkness. Thomas peered up at the hole through which they'd come. It looked like a square window into a deep, starless space.
"The computer's over there," Teresa said, grabbing his attention.
Several feet down the tunnel, she had aimed her light at a small square of grimy glass that shone a dull green color. Beneath it, a keyboard was set into the wall, angling out enough for someone to type on it with ease if standing. There it was, ready for the code. Thomas couldn't help thinking it seemed too easy, too good to be true.
"Put the words in," Chuck yelled, slapping Thomas on the shoulder. "Hurry!"
Thomas motioned for Teresa to do it.
"Chuck and I'll keep watch. Make sure a griever doesn't come through the hole."
He just hoped the gladers had turned their attention from making the aisle in the maze to keeping the creatures away from the cliff.
"Okay,"
Teresa said. Thomas knew she was too smart to waste time arguing about it. She stepped up to the keyboard and screen, then started typing.
"Wait,"
Thomas called to her mind.
"Are you sure you know the words?"
She turned to him and scowled.
"I'm not an idiot, Tom. Yes, I'm perfectly capable of remembering."
A loud bang from above and behind them cut her off, made Thomas jump. He spun around to see a griever plop through the griever hole, appearing as if by magic from the dark square of black. The thing had retracted its spikes and arms to enter. When it landed with a squishy thump, a dozen sharp and nasty objects popped back out, looking deadlier than ever. Thomas pushed Chuck behind him and faced the creature, holding out his spear as if that would ward it off.
"Just keep typing, Teresa," he yelled.
A skinny metallic rod burst out of the griever's moist skin, unfolding into a long appendage with three spinning blades, which moved directly toward Thomas's face. He gripped at the end of his spear with both hands, squeezing tightly as he lowered the knife-laced point to the ground in front of him. The bladed arm moved within 2 feet, ready to slice his skin to bits. When it was just a foot away, Thomas tensed his muscles and swung the spear up, around, and toward the ceiling as hard as he could. It smacked the metal arm and pivoted the thing skyward, revolving in an arc until it slammed back into the body of the griever. The monster let out an angry shriek and pulled back several feet, its spikes retracting into its body. Thomas heaved breaths in and out.
"Maybe I can hold it off," he said quickly to Teresa. "Just hurry."
"I'm almost done," she replied.
The griever's spikes appeared again. It surged ahead, and another arm popped out of its skin and shot forward, this one with huge claws snapping to grab the spear. Thomas swung, this time from above his head, throwing every bit of strength into the attack. The spear crashed into the base of the claws. With a loud clunk and then a squishing sound, the entire arm ripped free of its socket, falling to the floor. Then, from some kind of mouth that Thomas couldn't see, the griever let out a long, piercing shriek and pulled back again. The spikes disappeared.
"These things are beatable!" Thomas shouted.
"It won't let me enter the last word," Teresa said in his mind.
Barely hearing her, not quite understanding, he yelled out a roar and charged ahead to take advantage of the griever's moment of weakness. Swinging his spear wildly, he jumped on top of the creature's bulbous body, whacking two metal arms away from him with a loud crack. He lifted the spear above his head, braced his feet, felt them sink into the disgusting blubber, then thrust the spear down and into the monster. A slimy yellow goo exploded from the flesh, splashing over Thomas's legs as he drove the spear as far as it would sink into the thing's body. Then he released the hilt of the weapon and jumped away, running back to Chuck and Teresa. Thomas watched in sick fascination as the griever twitched uncontrollably, spewing the yellow oil in every direction. Spikes popped in and out of the skin. Its remaining arms swung around in mass confusion, at times impaling its own body. Soon it began to slow, losing energy with every ounce of blood, or fuel, it lost. A few seconds later, it stopped moving altogether. Thomas couldn't believe it. He absolutely couldn't believe it. He'd just defeated a griever, one of the monsters that had terrorized the gladers for more than 2 years. He glanced behind him at Chuck, standing there with eyes wide.
"You killed it,"
the boy said. He laughed, as if that one act had solved all their problems.
"Wasn't so hard,"
Thomas muttered, then turned to see Teresa frantically typing away at the keyboard. He knew immediately that something was wrong.
"What's the problem?"
he asked, almost shouting. He ran up to look over her shoulder and saw that she kept typing the word push over and over, but nothing appeared on the screen. She pointed at the dirty square of glass, empty but for its greenish glow of life.
"I put in all the words and one by one they appeared on the screen. Then something beeped and they'd disappear. But it won't let me type in the last word. Nothing's happening."
Cold filled Thomas's veins as Teresa's words sank in.
"Well, why?"
"I don't know."
She tried again, then again. Nothing appeared.
"Thomas!"
Chuck screamed from behind them. Thomas turned to see him pointing at the griever hole. Another creature was making its way through. As he watched, it plopped down on top of its dead brother, and another griever started entering the hole.
"What's taking so long?"
Chuck cried frantically.
"You said they'd turn off when you punched in the code."
Both grievers had righted themselves and extended their spikes, had started moving toward them.
"It won't let us enter the word push,"
Thomas said absently, not really speaking to Chuck, but trying to think of a solution.
"I don't get it,"
Teresa said. The grievers were coming, only a few feet away. Feeling his will fade into blackness, Thomas braced his feet and held up his fists half-heartedly. It was supposed to work. The code was supposed to...
"Maybe you should just push that button," Chuck said.
Thomas was so surprised by the random statement that he turned away from the grievers, looked at the boy. Chuck was pointing at a spot near the floor, right underneath the screen and keyboard. Before he could move, Teresa was already down there, crouching on her knees. And consumed by curiosity, by a fleeting hope, Thomas joined her, collapsing to the ground to get a better look. He heard the griever moan and roar behind him, felt a sharp claw grab his shirt, felt a prick of pain. but he could only stare. A small red button was set into the wall only a few inches above the floor. Three black words were printed there, so obvious he